Blog Talk Radio.
Happy 4th of July, 2013. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon, and tonight we present a discussion on the symbolism and meaning of the 29th path of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life leading from Malkuth to Netzach. And this is the path of the moon, that's the tarot trump, and it is a watery route up to the seventh sphere of Netzach, which is attributed to Venus. And it's attributed to the realm of nature and natural philosophy. Once again, our texts will be Dion Fortune's Mystical Kabbalah and Gareth Knight's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism. We will also summarize our own version of this path, as recorded in our special Pathworkings DVD used in our associate member program. Now, in our system, the goddess Astarte resides in the temple of Netzach, and her divine body contains all of the psychic centers, as chakras, of the lightning flash middle pillar system. So, if you want to get up close and magical with Mother Nature, tune in and we'll pay the goddess a visit. Now, this path, as the others we have been discussing, and the other two paths, are the ones that go up from Malkuth in Ashia, the sphere of the physical universe, the sphere of manifestation, the sphere that we dealt with and tried to explain to you was really not just the mundane bottom of the tree. It's actually, Malkuth is the plane of manifestation. It's next to Keter is the most important sphere in the whole tree of life. And it's where things happen and things get done, and it's very, very magical. Now, from Malkuth, we have three paths leading up to one path over on the left side, leads up to the bottom of the Pillar of Severity, and that's Hod over there. And then on the right side, we have this 29th path, which we're going to explore tonight. And that leads on up to Netzach, the sphere of Venus, on the right side. And that side is called the Pillar of Mercy. And then we have right up the middle, and we already did that one, the 32nd path, and that leads up to the sphere of Yesod, which is at the bottom of the middle pillar. And, well, Malkuth is at the bottom of the middle pillar, but Yesod is right above Malkuth. And Yesod, of course, is called the foundation. It's the sphere of memory, and it's attributed to the moon, and it's the beginning of the so-called astral plane, or your zero dimension. Now, tonight, we're going to deal with the 29th path, and that, of course, is the path that leads up to Netzach, the sphere of Venus, which is attributed to Aphrodite and nature. And I'm going to read you from Gareth Knight's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism. I'm going to read you the attributes of Netzach, so we'll know what we are heading up to. Now, the magical image of Netzach, traditional magical image, is a beautiful naked woman. Netzach is called the Sphere of Victory. The god name is Yahweh Sabaoth, and of course, One change we made in the Hermetic Kabbalah that we use, we refer to this as a Masha Ozabeoth because we use a generic tetragrammaton, but you know it's traditionally it's Ozabeoth. And the Archangels Haniel, and the order of angels, very important. The order of the angels attributed to Netzach are the Elohim. Now, the Elohim, that's, of course, the plural of El, El meaning God. So Elohim means the gods. And literally, this means a group of pagan gods. And then the mundane chakra, in other words, the physical manifestation, is the planet Venus. Number two is unselfishness. And the titles are firmness and valor. A spiritual experience is the vision of beauty triumphant. That's what if the color is amber, the other color is emerald, the Yetziric color is bright yellow-green, and the Isaiah color in Malkuth would be olive flecked with gold. Now, the vice is promiscuity and lust, and the symbols are the lamp, the girdle, and the rose. Now, that's, a bare-bones symbolic description of the sphere of Netzach. Let's discuss the sphere of Netzach first, and then we'll discuss the attributes of the path that go up to it, because they're both very, very much related. As you know, these paths, the symbolism of these paths is closely related to, obviously has to be, closely related to the attributes and the experiences expected in the sphere that they go to. And in fact, one of the secrets of properly coloring your tarot deck, which some people that try to do Golden Dawn tarot decks, they don't realize this, one of the secrets of properly coloring your tarot deck is to take the minutum mundum color of the sphere and make that color and the color of the path, as the minutum mundum, make that the secondary color, and I think it's the primary color is the color of the path itself, because the tarot card is attributed to it, and a secondary color would be the color of the sphere in the minutum mundum. And what I mean by the minutum mundum is that this is the combination, Golden Dawn combination color scale, where the paths are isolithic and these spheres are briatic. And we've explained that situation before, but this is a composite color arrangement we use for the Tree of Life. Now, I'm a little bit technical here, but what I want to get across here about this, the symbolism of Netzach is that it is the sphere of natural philosophy, natural attributes, the sphere of, one might say, subliminal, basic, I hesitate to say animal urges and that sort of thing, because that gets a little bit negative, but this is the natural forces that we're symbolizing here, and we want to try to look at this, and we try to see this in the most positive and uplifting manner possible. Let's say that I would think the most the purest and most elevated idea of Netzach would probably be Farfarian, would be not exactly the worship of nature, but the ensouling of nature, the idea that nature, it being the work of God, the work of divine providence, that nature should be revered, and nature should be, whenever possible, nature should be extolled, and it should be beautiful. It should be seen in the most beautiful light possible. This is the inner working of the sphere, is the holiness and the beauty and the basic rightness of nature itself. And therefore, the generative process the generative process, the sexual process, if you will, is paramount in NetSoc because that's the creative process of nature. And so therefore, the magical image, of course, is a beautiful naked woman, which is a symbol of the goddess, the earth goddess, the mother goddess, the goddess of love, the goddess of beauty. And in this case, in our case, of course, that fits the idea of Astarte and even higher up, Asherah out of the sea, but that's you know, much higher up the tree. But Aphrodite is generally, it was, of course, the Greek counterpart of Astarte. In fact, Aphrodite probably arose out of Astarte, actually. And so we place the goddess. This is the sphere of the goddess, and this is also the sphere of what I would call this is the sphere of paganism. This is the sphere that our Wiccan friends should be happiest with in all the Kabbalah. You know, a lot of them don't like the Kabbalah, but let me say this. We spell Kabbalah, or we try to most of the time spell Kabbalah, Q-A-B-A-L-A-H, Kabbalah. And that differentiates it from Orthodox Hebrew Kabbalah, which is K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H. We pronounce it Kabbalah. They pronounce it Kabbalah. And the Hermetic Kabbalah, for the past several hundred years, has incorporated a great number of aspects that into its symbolism and into its meaning and into its operative structure that the Hebrew Kabbalah doesn't deal with. And one of those aspects, of course, is the visual imagery of Renaissance art and the Renaissance interest in classical paganism. I mean, our Renaissance scholars and philosophers, even though they professed to be good Christians, and of course I'm sure that they felt that they were, but they were also absolutely fascinated with a revival of classical beauty and art and sensuality. And so their version of the Kabbalah, and of course we began to so-called Christianize or Rosicrucianize or whatever, hermeticize the Kabbalah, re-hermeticize the Kabbalah, because the Kabbalah came out of Alexandria and it was originally inspired by the Hermetic tradition anyway, but it then for a while it became very, very Judified, and then the Renaissance philosophers, Ficino and Pico, especially Pico della Mirandola, they rediscovered it, and they were having their wonderful revival of classical paganism, and they began to incorporate all of this back into the Kabbalah. So our Q-A-B-A-L-A-H has a lot of these elements. And NetSoc is really the place where this wonderful rebirth of classical paganism, where it fits, where it goes. And so it is the best place, NetSoc is the best place to have our representation of the goddess, and have her temple, and have this is where you should meet the goddess and take the goddess within yourself and then let your spirit go into the goddess. And so we definitely do that in our version of this sphere. Now, and I will discuss how we do that when we get a little further on into this. Now, and of course, going up the path, we will start that. We'll start that process. Now, as you probably know by now, that these path workings are anthropomorphized like physical journeys, like you're setting forth on a quest, and Naturally, the tree of life is a schematic. It's we don't presume that that the universe actually looks like this, or we set it up on a geometric. One thing we do know, and I think I should mention this, that there is a master grid, Pythagorean master grid, that the tree of life is established on. And there are many different configurations of the tree of life, all of which are valid, providing they fit on this master grid. And if they don't fit on the master grid, then you can say that, well, they're not really valid. And I can look at, there are lots of books on magic out there, and I can flip through them, and boy, when I see one of these trees of life that is not set up on the grid, no matter how many paths or spheres it might have, if it isn't, I know that, you know, this is one that is valid. So, as a schematic, it should be set up geometrically on this grid. But it looks kind of like a pinball machine. If you look at it, you know, when you look down at a pinball machine, you know, you've all seen a pinball machine or whatever, I'm sure. But really, the universe is like a pinball machine, and we're to say that it does. We are just using this as an operative schematic to use our anthropomorphized symbolism. And one thing that Gareth Knight stresses in his Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism is the anthropomorphizing the symbolic extrapolations that we make from the images that we know and from the mythology that we want to apply to these situations. And so therefore, when we do these paths, we walk these paths, and then sometimes we fly from, using the boat, the higher paths, we fly over the paths we've already done, and then we get out, we walk them. And usually doing this, in our hypnotic reveries where we're guided up the paths, we see these as natural settings in the woods and the trees and the caves and the mountains and crossing the streams and going across the oceans or whatever it is we do. We see that in the settings that we know, natural settings, and we have the architecture and the symbols and the animals and the people and the gods and the goddesses, all the things we are familiar with, using these symbols to get across points and experiences, which actually, if you know, in the sense that they had any transpersonal reality, the most you could probably say for them, if you're looking at ultimate reality, would be that they're geometric energy forms and matrices, and even how do we describe a living concept, or even a sentient being that is a living concept? These are extrapolations that even if you can wrap your mind around them, at the same time, they're difficult for you to actually grasp in an emotional way. So the symbolism is necessary, and traditional symbolism is necessary. Now, let's talk about the path that leads up to this wonderful, beautiful nature, natural sphere of that stuff. Let's talk about the 29th path. The 29th path, as Gareth describes it, is the Hebrew letter is Pulf, and we translate that, of course, into Phoenician characters. It makes it easier to visualize and easier to remember. And the spiritual significance is the sign of Pisces, the fishes. Now, I want to mention here that this path is not specifically assigned to the element of water. That's up there, further up the tree, up around where the hangman is. But we need it. We need it for training purposes. We need it to get the elements taken care of in a symbolic manner as we start up the tree. And over there, on the 31st path, leading up to Hod, that's definitely attributed to the element of fire. Now, the 32nd path, leading up to Yesod, is attributed to the planet Saturn, but that is really, by default, that is the Kabbalistic Earth element. So we can handle the gnomes and the Earth element on the 32nd path. But this leaves us over here with the 29th path going up to going up to Nitzhak, being attributed to Pisces, which is not exactly the water element, but it's close enough. And so in order to get the water element across early in our work, be able to master these elements, we have taken the liberty of attributing this. In other words, if you're going to meet the Undines, the mermaids, and I know Bill and Mr. Lay will like this, if you're going to meet the Undines, this is the place to meet them. So we do that. And now the ruler of Flux and Reflux, Child of the Sons of the Mighty, and the tarot card is the Moon. The theory is supposedly the ruler of Flux and Reflux, Child of the Sons of the Mighty. The tarot trump is the Moon, and if you recall, it's a very, very. This is one of the most mystical and one of the most mysterious of the tarot trump designs, and this is one where you have the wolf and the dog, the wolf on one side, the dog on the other, and the water, the lobster comes up out of the water. I like that because I'm a Cancer. So a lobster comes up out of the water between the wolf and the moon, and then there are these two mysterious towers down the trail that leads into this, leads ashore, these mysterious towers, and above that is the moon, and the moon is dripping. Well, you think in Waite's version it's dripping yodes, but actually it's dripping blood. And so this is a very, very, very mysterious card. And now the 29th path is the corporeal intelligence, according to the old Kabbalah. And so-called because it forms every body which is formed in all the worlds and the reproduction of them. In other words, it's physical and visceral and physical and subliminal and all that good stuff. Anyway, so we're going to go and up this path. But what I want to point out is that going back again to when we first created this path working system that we have, and as you recall, we based it upon the actual hypnotic method of Kirpal Singh's path workings that he was doing in the Sikh Sant tradition, and we were fortunate enough to have a member who had studied under Kirpal, and so he was a good hypnotist, and he took us on one of these ones that Kirpal Singh had done. Kirpal Singh was the master of Paul Twitchell, who created the Ekankar, which was a whole cult that did nothing but path work using. Oh boy, the thing about Kirpal Singh's path work, number one, they were very hypnotic, and number two, they took you to specific attention points. And before Kirpal Singh developed this wasn't really done that much. I mean, sure, you visited various things on the path and you got your impressions of them. But the way Kirpal Singh did this was he took you right up to the inscription or to the entity or to the be or to whatever the feature was. And then the leader of the path, the guide, would say, "And now you are standing under this arch, and you are looking up at this inscription, and you could read the inscription. And it is in a language you can understand, and it says something that's very important to you, and you will remember it." And then he gives you 5 seconds or 7 seconds to see the inscription and remember what it is. That's the way Kirpal Singh did it. And this is what makes pathworkies worth doing. And this is what makes them into actual astral initiations. And so we were so fascinated by this that we got Gareth Knight's book. I already read his New Dimensions Red book. and he had a path working in there that he'd done, and they didn't use this attention point system. Well, he almost did, but not as specific as the Laker pulse thing did it. So we took his Kabbalistic, it's the Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, two volumes. It's Mack and Pritz, wonderful book, and he did all this analysis of the paths and the symbolism from the Hermetic Kabbalah point of view. Now, I might say that Yarath Knight, Basil Willoughby, was a follower and a successor to Dion Fortune. And so, obviously, this is Stella Matutina type, Golden Dawn type type symbolism. Now, so Yarath, in his two volume set, he has articles on the paths and the spheres, and all of them. Dion Fortune, unfortunately, with her mystical Kabbalah, she could only cover the spheres because she felt that the paths were secret, and yet by the time she passed on and Yarath Knight took over, the paths were no longer secret, so he was able to do this, and it's a wonderful book. Now, he, in describing the path, he describes that this path is attributed to to the sexual reproductive process and to the desires and the objectives and the desires of nature itself, and with a little bit of moralism thrown in, but still, that's essentially it. It's a pagan experience, and the goddess is very definitely figured. Now, Yarath Knight has in here, I'm going to read a little bit of this to you, because you'll recognize it pretty quickly if you're familiar with our thing. He says, in this savage aspect of nature and in man, the whole history of taboo, superstition, blood sacrifice, the primitive magic of urine and entrails, that is the makeup of the hideous black Isis, which could be said to sit at the threshold of this path, the kind of a malignant sphinx. The answer to the terrible riddle of the sphinx is, however, man, and the highest form a physical existence, who goes through the travails of physical evolution, veritable labors of Hercules, to eventually become a god. And at the end of this terrible 29th path is the shining image of Netzach, the beautiful naked woman, the white Isis, the vision of beauty triumphant. This is not a thing that can be intellectually demonstrated, for it is a mystical experience, the transformation of the dark, hideous goddess to the bright, shining, and beautiful one. Well, I really, when I read that way back, oh gosh, that was 40 years ago, you know, just a kid. When I read that, boy, and I thought, yeah, and that's what we got to do. We got to confront the Dark Mother. And then when we get through a confrontation with the Dark Mother, then we can realize, get it up to Netzach, and we can realize the beauty of the great goddess herself. So that's what we did. So we set up our path working based upon what Yarath Knight had gotten into here. And by the way, he even described her as Lilith. Over here on a couple pages away, he says, one bird maiden, which corresponds well to the 29th path, however, is that depicted on the Sumerian big clay plaque some 4,000 years old, who is earthy and lunar aspects are shown by her headdress of bull's horns and the measuring instrument she holds, and she's winged but has clawed feet, and both of these are bird attributions, but wings in that they can lift to great heights are cosmic spiritual symbols, while claws convey ideas of the primitive and even demonic. She is said to be Lilith, that strange woman who was said to be before Eve. Okay, so that from old Basil, Yarath Knight, and off we went. Now, so here's what we did. We started out in the nighted reef, coral reef, under the night sky with a beautiful big full moon up there, that's the moon tower part, and we went down under the water, and of course I was for years and years and years a spear fisherman and a scuba diver and all that, so I'm very familiar with coral reefs, and so this was right at home for me. So we go down, and I've even done them at night too. So we go down into the coral, the beautiful luminous coral reef at night, and we meet the undines. And they are, you know, kind of shy, mermen, and we meet the undines, and the undines warm up to us a little bit, give us the secrets of the water element, and we remember that. And then we come to the surface, and we mount a seashell sled that is pulled by dolphins, and we go up over the crest of the waves and off toward the moon on the moon path, and that's when we come to the island of the Dark Mother. And, of course, this we use the symbolism of the tarot card. We have a big statue of a wolf and a big statue of a dog on either side of the gate, going up to the surf, and we go ashore, and the island is very jungly, and it's just really dank and dark and a lot of decay and all in deadfalls and whatever and creepers. And so we go through this dark jungle, and we get to this clearing in the middle of the jungle, real deep grass, and in the middle of this clearing is this ruined old temple, and in the middle of that temple, inside that temple, is the statue of the Dark Mother, which looks an awful lot like Lilith. And we have to crawl on our bellies to get down through the arches because the temple is sunk down into the kind of the mud. And we have to crawl on our bellies to get into the temple. But before that, we see, I don't know whether I want to spoil this for you too much, but we see this, all these carved figures all the way around the temple. If you can hear the fireworks outside, I don't know. But you see these figures carved all the way around the temple, doing all kinds of horrible things. So we crawl through, and we have our confrontation with the Dark Mother and her dark wisdom. And then on the inside of the temple, we see the other side of these people doing all these horrible things. So we have a revelation there, which I won't let you wonder about that. But anyway, so then we come out, we crawl out of the temple again, and we go down the other side of the island, and then we have a sort of a cleansing experience. We get to wash off in this beautiful lagoon, and down in the lagoon is we find these pearl oysters and these singing pearls. We all swim down. To an individual pearl, and this is an unburned soul, so it's very innocent, beautiful, and so we can commune with this, and sort of get ourselves purified after all of this, and cleaned out, and come back up and get on our dolphin sled again, and then we go off to the island of Netsak, which is of course the sphere, and we get to the island, and that's the Piscean Gate. We go through that, we get on the island. It's a beautiful, beautiful temple of Astarte, and it has a copper dome, and it's round, and it has a beautiful green jade tours and daphrous green veils, and there's beautiful gardens and carp and pools and doves cooing and roses growing and all of the symbolism that you expect from the temple of Astarte. But when we get up in there into the temple, the temple is about, the dome inside is 100 feet tall, and it's this pool of living water, a huge pool of living water, and the goddess Astarte, who is approximately 50 feet high, that's 50 feet high seated. She is seated in a sauna in the center of the pool with the water up around below her navel. And she is in trance, sitting there, and you can see all of her psychic centers glowing like jewels inside her translucent body as you're looking up and up and up and up. And now, this relates to the symbolism of the sphere of Netsak, of course, marvelously well, but And also, too, I want to point out that the goddess Tara, the goddess Tara in Tibet, and there are several different versions of Tara in Tibet, but the cult of Tara consists of Tara as being the universe. And we have had several Tara initiations, and I kind of feel like that this is the same sort of thing here in Netzach with the goddess Astarte. Is actually our counterpart to the Tibetan goddess Tara, in which she represents the universe. She is the universe. So we can have this wonderful experience of exploring the psychic centers themselves inside the goddess herself. And this is a beautiful, beautiful initiatory experience. And so you can imagine this gigantic figure of the goddess looming over you, and here you are, just a tiny little person down there, and you go up inside the goddess, and then when you get up to Netzach inside the goddess, you go in there and you're going to have an even more of an experience. I don't want to exactly reveal how that, I probably heard that one. I don't want to give that experience away, because that's one of the high points of the path working, but this becomes your full introduction, mystical introduction to the Caduceus of Hermes, the middle pillar on the lightning flash. This is the supreme experience of Netzach. And so you can come back down and out, and what we retrace the path. When we go back, we go around the island of the Dark Mother. We don't have to go back through that, and then back to the Reef of the Undines, and then up through the Tatra symbol. In this case, it is the Tatra symbol of the moon, and then down from the mirror or the soul door back into our bodies, and we have completed the path working. Now, this of course is. All of this, including the work which depicts it, and the questions for the attention points and the questions for them, are all on the DVD, the Pathwording DVD. And of course, I'm naturally encouraging you to join the Associate Member Program so you can order the Pathwording. But it's important this evening, though, for you to understand the basic symbolism, at least in the Hermetic Kabbalah, of this path, and how we think, at least, it should be experienced. Now, let's discuss as Gareth Knight does in his book here, how he discusses the very important relationship between Netzach and Haut. Now, remember, we did Haut last time. Haut is the sphere of the intellect. And Netzach, of course, is the sphere of the natural emotions and the sphere of more of the mystical related to the natural emotions and related to the... You could say Haut is more of a... a left brain thing, and Netzach is more of a right brain thing. You could use that analogy if you want, or you could say that Netzach is more feminine, and that you could say Haut is more masculine. You could say that too, I suppose. But actually, what these two spheres, as Gareth Knight points out, they are very, very much interrelated. Because they're both very, very important in magic, and in fact you really are not going to do any magic without using both of them, because magic certainly you can do mysticism without Haut. You can have the mystical experience. Now the difference between mysticism and magic, as I think most of us know, is that the mystic is a passive experience where the mystic prepares himself or herself and just lets it com. You can do this by putting yourself into a meditative reverie, by fasting, and by you can do this by very strenuous bicycle riding. I mean, you could bring on mysticism or mystical experience in a number of ways. But you don't, with a mystical experience, you're not trying to direct it. You're not trying to say, I am going to contact such and such an entity in such and such a hotel, in such and such a spiritual venue, and I'm going to do this. And you know, this is magic. Magic, you know, at least the way we practice it, is very visionary, and you're very spontaneous and all of that, but magic is an exercise of will. And will has to be, in order to do magic, you have to get into the sphere of Hod and use these processes that we've developed, this kind of software, if you will, if you want to look at it from a computer standpoint, to get what you're going for, and to get a vision and get a knowledge vision, or to accomplish something based upon the principles that you're going to use. Now, so mysticism is very subliminal and very kind of catch as catch can. It's capricious. You can't sure whether you're going to or not. And whereas magic is precise. Now, Hod is attributed to Mercury, and that's just the sphere of Mercury, the planet, of course, is all hot on one side, cold on the other, and so it's there's a certain hard logic about Hod, and the two spheres work very much together. Now, one of the reasons why we put the psychic centers, the spheres, and the goddess and all this over in Netzach and not in Hod is because these are actually spheres of mystery and emotion and these are not hard, fast objects we can that easily define. They have a mystical, ephemeral quality to them, and that should be actually contained. As I said, this is something that the goddess should contain, and this is something that is of the subconscious, whereas Hod tends to be the conscious mind accessing the subconscious. And so the psychic centers, the chakras, the god belong to the goddess. I feel like that they do. I don't feel that they should be If I'm going to sail strange seas in a ship, I want the ship to have a woman's name. I don't want it to have a man's name, because if it has a man's name, it's liable to hit something. Whatever, ships should have the names of ladies, and I feel that the goddess, in this sense, contains the deepest secrets and the deepest mysteries, and that's where our psychic center should be. Now, then the idea of the pagan forms, as I remember here again, this does actually relate to the traditional Hebrew Kabbalah, because they say that this is the sphere of the angels of the Elohim. That's Zohar. So they are saying themselves that this is the pagan sphere. And I'm going to, at the risk of having some people say that I'm doing too much violence to Kabbalah, which of course the Kabbalah can handle it, I'm sure. I don't think there's that much violence I can do to it. But the Zohar, which which I have all 22 volumes, or 23 with the index. And I found a great deal of paganism in the Zohar. I mean, really, there is a wonderful, wonderful underpinning of paganism in the Zohar. Now, also, I might add that the Shir Shirim, the Song of Solomon, which is very, very erotic and very sensual, that is the secret heart of the Zohar. Yeah, the Shir Shirim. Now, this should indicate that Netzach absolutely should be the sphere of the magical goddess. And you know, there's really no doubt about that in my mind. But then we set out, back when we started the OTA way back in 1969-70, we started out with the idea, even though we were in, a lot of this was subliminal and subconscious inspiration, but still, from a Hawaiian point of view, you know, he started out with the idea that we are going to make a bridge between the pagan movement and witchcraft and all, and ceremonial magic. We're going to make the bridge. We're going to make the connection. We are going to, because the pagans weren't getting along with the magicians, and the magicians weren't getting along with the pagans, and there's no reason for this. There's no reason for this at all, because the Renaissance so-called Christian magicians, especially in Italy, were very pagan. I mean, my gosh, Pacino and Giordano Bruno and Campanella and those guys were really pagan. And the Hypno Errato Magia is a huge magical book that's a pagan dream. And so there's no reason why we can't take ceremonial magic and put the paganism back into it, because it was in the Renaissance. Somehow or other, it got watered down and kind of drizzled out during the Victorian era. Well, not entirely, because, you know, the Golden Dawn has a lot of Egyptian symbolism in it, and so it's there. But there is, as I say, there is no reason why our pagan community should be looking down and saying, oh, those people are those CMs, you know, I don't want to fool around with them. No. Now, we've got the bridge. Now, the bridge, of course, is the best place to have that bridge and to establish that link is in Netzach, which is, as I say, the spear of the goddess. And the goddess is where the center system, the chakra, should be. Now, enough said about that. And next week, you're going to have a real, real treat for you, and very important. Next week, we're going to interview Frater Ashen Chasson, and he is the author of Gateways Through Stone Circle, a manual of evocation for the planetary intelligences. Now, this is published by Nephilim Press, and it just came out. And I've just finished this book. It's a nice hardcover, beautiful hardcover with a beautiful silver sigil embossed on the cover. And I have to tell you that this book is one of the best, if not the best, book on practical ceremonial magic in a Renaissance, I could say Solomonic tradition. It's primarily the Trithemius Book of Secret Things from Barris Magus is what he's primarily using as his grimoire base. But this book is absolutely wonderful, and the reason being that the author has done all of his preparations. He has done everything right. And he has built his own equipment, and he had gone ahead and trained himself and done these operations, these wonderful angelic operations in the crystal. And he's written in a very, very beautiful and adult and sophisticated style. I mean, this is not this is really a a book that, well, frankly, to tell you the truth, I wish I'd written it myself. It's really, really beautiful. And one of the things I like about it so much is that he is in his own way, and through his own lights and his own experiences, he is validating what we have been trying to teach, trying to get across. And this, as I say, there are so few books on magic in which you know that you are reading the works of a real magus, a man who is really doing it. So next week we're going to have the magus himself on board. I've already talked with him, and we're looking forward to that. And so next week, Frater Ashen Chesson and Gateways Through Stone and Circle. And until then, happy 4th of July. You still hear the fireworks out there. Happy 4th of July and good magic.